Hi, this is Donna with the Waldorf Connection, and welcome to Lesson 6, our final lesson of the Waldorf Homeschool U. And this is all about support and community. So I just want to congratulate you first. If you've been plotting your course along through this program with me, and we've kind of come step by step, you know, starting off with the basics and then just adding as we've gone along. You know, even if you just got through lesson 5, you know, you'd have a really good foundation for homeschooling and getting things set up, working on your rhythm and your planning, your presenting, you know, communicating with your child through temperaments and all of the things that we've talked about in the previous lessons. But I didn't want to leave you, you know, thinking that you have to do this whole thing by yourself, because it can really feel like you are kind of isolated and out there. And just, you know, from me, you know, going through my own experiences with my children and just, you know, the way things were before, I really created the Waldorf Connection and was out there trying to figure things out on my own. And it was, you know, sometimes I felt like I was sort of swimming upstream. And even though we had a local homeschool group and still do have a local homeschool co-op or group here where I live, and none of them are following the Waldorf philosophy or method. So, you know, I kind of think of us Waldorf homeschoolers as sort of on the fringe. You know, we're like the redheaded stepchild of the stepchildren. We're already homeschooling, right? And that's sort of off the beaten path. Less and less, you know, as the years go by, more and more people now homeschooling. And I remember when I first started talking about homeschooling, people were still kind of looking at me a little odd. And now, when I tell people I'm homeschooling, I usually get some kind of a remark like, oh, yes, my sister does that, or, you know, so-and-so I know does that. Like, there's somebody now that they know that's homeschooled. So I think it's becoming more and more accepted, and people are seeing it, you know, for what it is. But yet, there still is a lot of people out there who've never heard of Waldorf education and don't know anything about it. And at least in the community where I am, there's no one who's following that philosophy. So you may or may not be in a situation like this. You may have a nice Waldorf co-op or group of moms, like-minded moms, or play group or something. And I, you know, if you do, I just want to let you know that that's a very precious gift that you have. And so we're going to talk a little bit about support, getting your family support, you know, creating a group if that's possible in your area. And then talk a little bit about festivals, how you don't have to do that festivals alone. You can, you know, kind of band together and sharing a lot, because you do the experience of doing any of these things, festivals, even classes, and just getting together with others who are on the same path as you makes a huge difference. Because there's all, you know, there's ups and downs. There's, you know, good days and bad days. And some days you just want to throw the towel in and say, oh, I just don't think I can do this anymore. And it's nice to have somebody there in your life, whether it's a spouse, sister, mother, you know, friend, someone who understands or who can say, you know, it's all right, you're going to be fine, you know, kind of help you and support you and to give you that encouragement when you need it. So let's talk a little bit first about, you know, family support, because, you know, probably that is your, you know, most likely will be your biggest influence if you're married. And if you're single, then there still may be, you know, the ex-spouse or perhaps a mom or sister, someone that you're close to. And they can really be your biggest cheerleader and supporter, because, you know, they're close to home and they either live there or have a lot of involvement, you know, with the child. And they can also be your biggest obstacle. So hopefully, you know, they're in support of you. And I know I hear a lot about this from the moms in my group, those who are interested, who want to homeschool, that a lot of times their husband or someone in the family is against it. Perhaps their mother-in-law is a teacher or something, and a lot of times there's some flack there. from teachers in the family. So I think really a lot of times it's just that they don't understand. You know, I've had this many times with people in my own life that they don't see how you could possibly, you know, be enough to educate your child. And in the beginning, you may feel that way as well. How can I possibly do all of this? But as we've discussed, I mean, it's really a progression. You know, you don't have to know chemistry to teach your first grader to read. So it's all taking things step by step, and it's a process. And I think most of you probably have children on the younger side. So in those early days, you know, as long as you can read and have skills, you can teach your children, and you don't have to be a mathematician or a scientist to teach. So I think the number one thing to getting your spouse or close family members on board with you is that they really need to be well informed. They need to understand what you're doing or what you're trying to do and why. Just like you have spent all this time going through this course, have been reading, have been researching, looking at blogs, and trying to find out, you know, the whole process behind Waldorf education, you know, why it works and why we do things we do, and, you know, why are these things a little bit different that you may see in a mainstream society and different things going on. They need to understand what that's all about and the whys. So it's hard maybe to try to, keep them totally in the loop, but to giving them as much as you can, sort of a shortened version, explain, you know, why you're doing it. And it helps, because otherwise they really don't have a clue. And, you know, I can just say we kind of went through this a little bit, and I think that you will probably understand this when I tell you this story. But, I think the thing about reading, that was something, you know, my kids not reading when I had my sister has my niece is pretty much the same age as my girls. And so, you know, she was in public school and was in kindergarten learning to read and everything. And, of course, that started to be a sort of an issue, you know, with my family. Like, questions started to come, how come your girls aren't learning? When will they be learning their ABCs? I remember one holiday my sister, you know, kind of cornered my girls in the room, was, like, grilling them about their ABCs. You know, just sometimes people just don't understand, and they see that what you're doing is different. And so and it's not that they're trying to be nasty, or they're trying to do something. They're trying to help, and they're trying to figure out, you know, do they need to step in, and what, you know, what's actually happening. So I think by keeping them informed, explaining to things, you know, ahead of time, then there's sort of a level of, okay, you know, she sounds like she knows what she's talking about, and we're going to trust her. Because that's kind of what happened with me with my mom. I remember saying, okay, listen, my girls are not going to be learning to read, and our niece over here is learning to read, and so I don't want that to be an issue. It's still, you know, they will be learning to read when it's time. And you know, now that we're on the other end of all of that, it's really easy to look back and say, okay, I'm so glad we waited. I mean, my girls are amazing readers now, totally not only caught up to my niece, but love to read, where she won't even pick up a book because she's burned out already in the school system, and really just, you know, has had a lot of struggles in her academics. And I'm not trying to bash public education or anything. All I'm saying is that my girls are not behind because they learned to read 2 years later, and they're in fact probably on a higher, you know, reading level, and are reading, you know, more thicker, voraciously reading books. So there is a little bit of faith there at the beginning, you know, when you may not see these fruits of your labor. You know, it may take a few years before things start to fall into place. And there is a little bit of that, like, okay, I'm just going to go with this is the way it's going to work. And I can look back now and say, oh, I'm so glad I didn't, you know, skimp and start teaching them too early. I waited until they were just turning 7 when we started first grade, and then I still didn't push the reading. I think you've probably heard my story where one of my girls was reading way before the other. Her teeth had fallen out a year ahead of the other one, and the one that hadn't lost her teeth had no interest in the reading. And now she's the one who I can't even keep in a book less than 600 pages. And she's read just about everything in the library. And so there's no, she started too late and now she's behind for the rest of her life or anything like that. In fact, she loves to read. But I think if I had pushed that issue, if I had made her try to, you know, keep up with her sister and do it when she wasn't ready, it could have been something that turned her off to reading, and it could have been something where, you know, she just would have been, you know, I don't want to say scarred for life, but just, you know, there's some things that happen in our childhood that could really shape the way we feel about things in the future. So, all right, let me stay on with the support. So basically what I'm just trying to say is to keep your spouse informed. Let them know what's going on. Let them see the progress that you're making. And, you know, my husband was pretty quiet about it, I remember, for the first 2 years. And then I overheard a conversation that he was having with someone else. And he didn't know I could hear. And it was so interesting to hear how proud he was of the progress and what his girls had learned, that they were sewing and they could knit and they could play their instruments and they were singing and they were, you know, sculpting and painting and all of these things. So it was really, you know, it was really nice for me to kind of hear. And he was trying to explain how Waldorf education works and everything, you know, from just what he's heard from me explaining to him and what we've been living here, of course. So trying to keep them updated, trying to keep them informed of what you're doing and why you're doing, I think is a really big key. And, you know, you want, however you feel you want to do that, you know, like a monthly, I don't want to say a progress report, but if you have some kind of a planner, you know, where you're jotting things down and it's charting your progress, then you'll have everything right there. And if somebody's always asking, you know, what are you guys doing? You know, you've got your planner right there and it with all your notes and everything. Well, here's what we're doing, you know, and a lot of it may look like art and it may look like painting and it may look like, you know, games. But of course, we know that a lot of those things are the stepping stones to the reading and the math and the sciences and the things that will come in later as developing, and that the children are playing and all of that. So I think it's just, you know, understanding kind of what you're doing yourself. And you can just, you know, a little bit at a time here. You don't have to know everything, but just know what you need to know and to be able to explain that sort of in a shortened version to your parents or spouse or whoever. And just have that. You know, just to have that, and so that they know what's going on. Because it really is nice to have your spouse, again, supporting you. Because, like, there'll be those days where you just feel like, ugh, I don't know if I can do this. The kids are acting up, or, you know, I'm tired, or I'm sick, and I need some help. So, you know, having a cheerleader is really nice to be somebody to be in your corner who supports you, you know, no matter what, is nice, and as much as possible. I know we've had somebody in our group even who was letting their husband listen to this program so that they can understand, you know, what's going on and why, you know, why we're doing what we're doing. A lot of times there may be some flack with, you know, the limited TV and screen time and the toys and all of that. I know that comes in with a family again. You know, with family, we've had issues with, you know, people giving gifts and, you know, things, even though that I've said we don't do these certain things, family, it, you know, creeps in. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But again, trying to explain to your husband, you know, and sometimes you'll have to make compromises. I mean, we were not, the girls were never like watching TV or anything, but they had videos when they were young. And then when we found Waldorf, I pretty much stopped all of that. You know, they do watch a video maybe once a month or something that I have. And I've had to work with my husband on that, you know, like with the TV does not come on until the girls are in bed. And, you know, and we've just, you know, there's, sometimes he wants to watch sports and things, and then I just take the girls in another room or take them outside or whatever. I mean, there's always compromises. It's, you know, if it was up to me, I would just say, fine, let's get rid of the TV, but he doesn't want that, and so I have to honor that, and so we just come up with a compromise that fits us, and again, we'll talk about that a little bit more when we start to kind of fit in this pop culture. But again, understanding why and trying to, you know, to know that, you know, this is the reason that we're doing that, and trying to explain that to family and having them to understand, even if they don't always agree, at least having them understand why you're doing it so that they can, you know, hopefully silently support you. And that's always, you know, that's always good if they at least understand why you're doing that. Okay, let's see here. Another thing is to try to come up with and make decisions together. Again, like I just talked about compromising, like coming up with, you know, the thing about, okay, we're going to watch TV, but not until the girls come to bed. You know, try to get their input on things. They'll go, you know, the support a lot will go a long way if they feel like they have some sort of input on what you're doing. So, you know, maybe even like a monthly, and my husband and I have like a weekly date night where we kind of reconnect on Saturday nights. And so a lot of times I'll discuss, you know, what's going on with the kids in school and, you know, this and that. And sometimes, you know, I'll be stuck on something to do for the lesson or whatever, and he'll have a really great idea. And I think, you know, it kind of gives them, yeah, their input into their children's education. So if there's something that, you know, they have skills with that they could really help, or in my case, my math skills that I'm not real great with, I'll go to my husband and say, I'm having a hard time with this. Do you have another way you could help me explain this to them? You know, and he usually does. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's awesome. I think I'm learning that too. So I'm just having that input, having them, you know, kind of come up with decisions, whether it's about bedtime, you know, you're working on rhythm. You know, talk with them about what would be a good time that would be, you know, do you think the kids should be in bed? You know, 8 o'clock, is that, you know, that gives us time, or 7:30, that gives us time to spend in the evening together. When you're redoing things like that, you know, get their input, ask their advice, and come up with things together, because that way you'll feel, you know, you've done it together, and they'll be a lot more apt to help and support if they felt like they've been a part of that as well. And that, of course, that goes, of course, with other family members that you're close to as well. Let's see here. So we talked a little bit about, you know, just keeping them updated on your progress, you know, letting other family members know about, you know, what's happening. And so just going to do a quick recap here. So, you know, number one thing to get your family support is to help them understand the what and the why. Number two, make joint decisions and compromises if possible. And number three is to keep them informed on your progress. So those are three key ways to kind of get your family support and get them on board. And, you know, you may be like, okay, well, how is all this going to support me? You know, everything, you know, and really everything will just feel more relaxed. You'll feel like you're just not out there by yourself doing it when your husband is glaring at you and wishing you had your kids in school, you know, or the same thing with your family. If you've got the support, it'll just make everything a lot more relaxed. You'll feel like they're on your side and, like I said, sort of a cheerleader where you'll, and it really helps even, like I said, to get their help. They'll be willing to help teach if you're sick or, you know, if you have a mom who's a great musician or something, maybe she would be more willing to come and help teach the children or whatever if she's all on board with what's going on. All right, so let's kind of move on to the next subject, and that's about, we talked about it a little bit, about this pop culture. You know, we'll talk a little bit. So now we've talked a little bit about close, like family. Now let's move out to be your everyday friends and acquaintances and neighbors, you know, people that you kind of see quite often and talk with. You know, it's not as necessary to go into as much depth, you know, I would say with them as it is like your really family members or really close friends. But still, I think it's nice if they kind of understand a little bit about what you're doing because, you know, things, you know, you will come up and if they kind of understand, you know, what's going on, then they'll be like, oh, you know, we don't want you to be like living in this Waldorf bubble. And I think this is what a lot of people think they have to do. They have to live in this bubble and they, you know, can no longer be around their other neighbors and friends because their kids can't watch TV and they can't, you know, play with toys that aren't, you know, wooden and all of that. And it is hard. It is hard to kind of integrate, you know, the life that we want, and it seems like there's all these rules or things that we want in our children's lives, and it's like hard enough to do it in our own homes, but then to kind of venture out, what do we do when we, you know, the kids want to go to the neighbors or the neighbors want to come over? And you know, I want to talk about this. So how not to isolate yourself when living a wilderness lifestyle. And this really is a huge topic. We could probably have an entire course on this, but I just want to touch a little bit on this because, you know, it is probably in your mind. And if you haven't already come up across this, you will down the line. So I think the first thing that I want to say here is to know what you can and cannot, or what you won't, will and will not compromise on. And that's sort of a good place to get started. So, like, for me, there are some absolute no's, you know. And so when I'm thinking about what I will or will not let my children do, and I think about this because I know my children will go with my parents out of town to visit my sister and things, and I know there's going to be some things that they'll do that we don't normally do here, and I can't watch them 24 hours a day, and I can't control everything that's going on. But there are a few things, you know, that I kind of put my foot down. No TV and no, you know, this and that. And, you know, there's a few things that I just want to say there's an absolute no, and I will not compromise on that. And then there may be some things that you think, yeah, I don't really care for that, but if they do it once or twice, you know, it's not the end of the world. And this is going to be different for everyone. So I can't say, here's what you need to do and here's what you won't. You know, everybody's different and everybody's level of compromise is different. And I guess you just have to make that decision. And, you know, once you go on a little bit, then you'll try to see. So, like, I'm just going to give you an example. For an example, it seems like no matter where we go, there's always, like, food and sweets and, you know, whether it's even at our local homeschool co-op, they're always having party day, you know, for whatever, Valentine party or something, and there's always a lot of sugar and things. And we try to eat healthy and organic here as much as we can. So, but, you know, obviously I'm not going to send them, you know, to the Valentine party with carrot sticks or whatever. They don't have any allergies, so there's no real reason other than I don't want them to have it, you know, and it's not healthy. So in that case, I will compromise and let them have, you know, some cupcakes or whatever they're going to have, but they need to drink water. So that's my no soda on top of it. They can easily drink the water, and at least that makes me feel like they're getting something, and it's not extra sugars or whatever. So every time they'll go out to dinner or do something like that, if they're going to have desserts, they get water. They don't drink any soda or juice and that kind of thing for the added sugar. So that's like one compromise I'll make. They can have the cupcake, but they need to drink the water that goes with it. So, you know, depending, or they can watch a video that I've approved, you know, but not TV, you know, that kind of, so you have to kind of, so this is what I mean about trying to come up with things that you will or will not do, and that you may just have to kind of flesh out on a case-by-case scenario. You know, I don't know that you're going to sit down and make a list of these things out, like, after you listen to me, but just kind of keep it in your mind whether that's an absolute no. Like, bedtime was a huge stickler for me, and I've just now started to soften a little bit as the girls are 10 and a half, but bedtime was my stickler. They need to be in bed, you know, to keep our routine. I always stuck with that. You know, I mean, there were a few very, very, very few times where they were, you know, missed their bedtime, you know, and it was like maybe the 4th of July or something where they had to watch fireworks, you know, or whatever. But, I mean, I would say 99% of the time they were in bed on time, you know, no matter we were traveling or whatever, if it could be helped at all. I was a real stickler for them getting rest and to have that bedtime. So, you know, it may be just things as you go along that you just say, no, absolutely they need this or they need that. And you'll be tested out, and you'll see. And, you know, you may make a decision and say later, ooh, I wish I hadn't done that. This really is one of those things that I will not compromise on. And the next time, you know, you've got to be able to, you know, you can stand and say, okay, no, this is not one of those things. This is an absolute. I don't want to do that. So find your hot buttons. Find those things that you just really want to keep and that you really feel comfortable. And then, you know, it depends. As your children get a little older, things will change. Things may change for you. You know, like I said, at the bedtimes now, they're getting older, and I realize that's fine for them. They don't need as much rest, and they start to make different decisions as they get a little bit older. But again, it's the boundaries that we are making that kind of creates the foundations. You know, and honestly, now that my girls will see something that they experience that's different or feels odd to them, they'll come back and tell me, and they might say, "Oh, this is really weird when my friend did this," or their mom said we could do that, kind of a thing, and it feels weird because they're not used to that. And it gives me an opportunity to talk with them about it. Okay, well, that that's how they handle things in their house, and this is how we handle things in our house. Because, you can't control what your children are doing when they're in other people's houses. You're not going to call their mom and say they're not allowed to watch TV. They're not allowed to play video games. That's when things kind of might get a little hairy. You just have to decide whether they should even go. Do you want them to go over there? Because probably if they go and the other child is doing it, they're going to do it too. They're going to watch it too or whatever. I've had this come up when I've been on, I won't say, just another family member's house where we've stayed for a weekend, and they do have a video game room or something, I was like, "Ooh, where are my girls? I don't hear anything. It's very quiet." And they were in there watching. And so I just said, "Come on, girls, let the boys play. I don't want you to watch this stuff." So I had to try to keep them out of the room. I wasn't going to tell the boys to stop, but I didn't want them playing some of the games or seeing some of the things they were doing. So, again, you just have to sort of make those decisions as you go. You don't want to be totally isolating your children from not playing with others. But then there's sort of a fine line, but yet you want to keep those boundaries and keep their innocence and things as much as you can. So, if you have kids over, a lot of times the Waldorf families are the ones where the kids end up playing outside. I know we do that here. Even when my niece comes, it takes her a day or so, but then suddenly she's outside. First she's bored. She doesn't want to do anything. She wants to watch TV. The next thing I know, she's outside and she's a kid again, and she's playing, like my girls play, because they're just used to doing it. And the imagination comes back, and they're jumping and they're running and they're playing outdoors with sticks and whatever. And they're just all into doing things that they don't normally do, and they're in their own homes. So yours could be that outdoor place where the kids can hang out and do things that they don't get to do, like bake cookies or play tag and be outside in nature and all of that. Okay, so that's one way to sort of navigate through, being with others, and again, it gives you the opportunity to just talk with your children. Well, this is the way we do it in our house. I say that a lot. Or this is the way, they may do something different over here, but here's the way we do it here. And so if they do come home with something less, that you're not really desiring for them to say or do, or something they've done, it's an opportunity. And again, this just based, also on the age of your child. My girl's a little bit older now, so of course there's more discussion in the younger time. You might, you'll just have to, we don't do that, or, however you want to say, in our house, this is the way we do this, or whatever. Because I've heard my girl say, so-and-so gets to stay up till 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, and how come we have to go to bed at 8 o'clock, But, I mean, you get that, I guess, from anyone. You just say, well, this is what we do in our house, kind of a thing. All right, so now let's talk a little bit about play groups and co-ops. So, where do you find these like-minded people? If you can find a group of people who are on the same page as you, of course, that's ideal, because you don't have to explain everything and everyone's sort of trying for a common goal. And, like I said earlier, if you've got a group, a play group, or a Waldorf-inspired group of some kind, then it's awesome because you can get together with the moms and talk about everything. Talk about the skills you're learning and what you're doing and about rhythm and about baking and festivals and everything. And you're all, pretty much on the same page. And, you don't have to worry as much about the media and, toys that you wouldn't really want your children to be play with, or video games and that type of thing. So how do we find these people, right? That's the key. If there isn't a group, or if you're in an area and you don't know anyone and you don't know if there even is a group, a lot of times you just have to be a little proactive and kind of look out, look around. Of course, you can talk to friends and neighbors and see if they know of anybody. If there's a Waldorf school nearby, then they're most likely, or a Waldorf preschool, a lot of, or morning gardens, and they're most likely, you know, there's other moms who, you know, are sending their children there, then obviously you've got, you know, a group right there, and maybe you can get the phone numbers from the moms and, you know, create a group outside of the play, you know, the preschool, like a monthly thing you get together, a weekly play group where the children get together, or a weekly handwork group for the moms to get together. I've heard of that a lot of times where they do a weekly handwork group for the moms, or a singing group for the moms. Because a lot of times it's the moms, especially in those early days, that really need the support of each other, like I was saying, and to be able to discuss these things that you're doing openly and freely and have someone understand what you're talking about is really priceless. So really, I think it's just, you know, kind of going out there and looking, asking friends. If you have a La Leche League, a Holistic Moms Network, maybe an organic food market, you know, I've heard of moms putting up flyers, you know, looking for other like-minded moms, you know, to start natural play group or something. I had a friend of mine who put in an ad in like the natural magazines that you get, the Natural Awakening magazine, you know, in the town looking for some people. The library would be a good place, you know, to put up a flyer, or to just even ask the librarian if there's other homeschoolers. I know we've got a library that everybody goes to here that's like the homeschool library, and you know, she was very informative and gave me a couple of names of some moms who she knew was, you know, oh, they checked this book out too. Maybe there's somebody you can kind of, you know, hang with or whatever. A local homeschooling co-op even is a good place to start, even if, you know, your child is not yet in the grades. I know we did this. I started with our local homeschool group when they were probably about 4. We just went to kind of check it out. And they did usually have some children their age, you know, siblings of the older ones, or those who are kind of getting ready. And there may be some other, they had like music classes and art classes and things like that. So even if it's not totally Waldorf or isn't Waldorf at all, there's still opportunities where you can meet with others and find a group, or, you know, and there may be somebody in that group that's who's doing Waldorf, or maybe has never heard of Waldorf but is looking for something, and, you know, you may be the one that talks them into using Waldorf if they've never heard of it before. So I think it's just going out and being a little proactive and searching, and just finding, you know, finding a group. Really, it's just wonderful if you can get that, you know, just even a few families in your area that you can meet together, and for festivals, like I said, just sort of a get-togethers. I know, unfortunately, in my area, there really isn't. The closest family that we do have is about almost an hour away, and so we really don't get together. You know, we do see them during like school functions and stuff sometimes for our homeschool co-op, but they're just too far away, you know, to do a, you know, weekly thing. We've gotten together for festivals and things before. But our area is very small and very touristy, so there's not a lot of homeschooling families anyway. But you know, usually there's be a few families you can find if you just keep looking and be persistent. And then once you got that, you only need a few, you know, families to kind of really make a big difference in your life. I know I'm talking a lot about the support, but it really does make such a difference when you can, you know, share all of this and share these festivals. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. And share the, you know, just the ups and downs, or just, hey, what did you do, you know, about this? And I know when I do, like I just went to Atlanta, that's sort of my, I call it my honorary homeschool group in Atlanta. Well, I've got several friends there, and it's just so nice to get together with moms and to talk about it, and they really understand, and I get so inspired and just kind of, you know, oh, that's a great idea, you know, just other ideas from other moms. It's great for people who've kind of been there ahead of you to kind of pull you along and give you suggestions. And that's why I encourage you guys who are part of this group, again, if you just don't have anyone and can't find anyone, you know, to use the Facebook group here to meet other moms. I mean, we've got, they're right here. So even if it is a virtual group, you know, that's the whole reason I started the Waldorf Connection, is because I just didn't have anyone here and I needed some help. And so creating this virtual group where I can talk to other moms and other teachers and other Waldorf, you know, gurus or whatever, to kind of get the information that I needed, was really the whole catalyst behind the Waldorf Connection. And so there's a great group of people on the Waldorf, on the Facebook group for the Waldorf Homeschool U. There's tons of moms on there. So please feel free to ask questions, just share ideas, anything you want, just lurk and read and get inspiration on there. But we are here, and I try to answer all the questions and respond back and forth. It's been a real active group, so thank you guys for those who are on there making that group, because, again, it is really vital and really important to have that. And sometimes it can be just that one little idea that someone gives you, or you hear, and you're thinking, oh, my God, that's perfect. That's exactly what I need. And sometimes it's questions and things you didn't even know to ask, but you just happen to read the question that someone else asked, and that, you know, is even, it's just awesome, because you're like, gosh, great. I didn't even know I had that question, and now it's been answered. So, you know, utilize that resource as often as you'd like. We love to see you come on and chat, and that's really what it's all about. And you don't have to do it alone, really. That's what I want you to feel like, that you've got some people there who are supporting you through your journey, no matter where you are. If you're just getting started, or you're already in the grades and you just have questions, we're here. All right. So let's talk a little bit about festivals. Again, if you've got a group, I'm going to talk first about that. If you've got a group or a small, even just a few families, to do festivals is really nice to have. At the beginning, I did not know this, and so we just did all our festivals in our yard, and it was just us, you know, and it was still great, and it was still wonderful, and it's just a lot more fun if you have other moms. And you don't have to do all the work. So you get to share in the food and, you know, and that kind of thing, and you can make it a little bit bigger, you know, of a get-together if you've got others. And even if there are people who, like, I've heard people just hosting, like, you know, we did this one year for, my brain is gone here, midwinter. I'm just trying to think of the word, but anyway. Where we did our spiral, and my family was all in for, you know, for the holiday, for the Christmas holidays, and they didn't know anything about any of the stuff we were doing, but we all went through and did the spiral and did the, you know, the festival and everything, and it was great. I mean, they didn't really know what we were talking about, but it was just amazing. And I think if you have a couple close friends or neighbors, even if they're not actually Waldorf, that would like to participate, like a May Day thing. I did that one year where I had a couple friends come over with their daughters, and we did a maypole, and they loved it. We had a little tea. We did a maypole. They had a cake, and we danced the maypole and picked some flowers. It was great. It was fun. It didn't matter that they were Waldorf or not. You know, it was just sharing that. So don't feel like you have to have a Waldorf family in order to do a festival. You know, of course, if you have some, it's great because they understand what's going on and you can kind of share that. And really, festivals are just a great way to bring in these traditions and celebrate the changing times of the year. So, you know, the four main turning points are the autumn equinox, the winter solstice, the spring equinox, and the summer solstice. As far as the seasons and the celebrations, there's a lot of festivals, you know, kind of sprinkled in and mixed in here and there. There's usually something going on almost every month, but you don't have to do, you know, all of the festivals, and you don't have to do one every month. You can just pick a few, and if you've never done any festivals, I recommend just, you know, picking something that sounds interesting to you or something that you may already, you know, be familiar with that you want to do, you know. And then once you get used to doing something and like, oh, yeah, and then adding something else. Again, this was another mistake I don't want you to make. I was like, oh, we're doing Waldorf. We have to do all the festivals. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. You know, like, I was doing festival after festival, plus on top of that, schooling, and then, you know, the regular holidays, Christmas and Thanksgiving. And there are a lot going on in the fall and the winter. on top of everything else. And please don't make that mistake, feeling that you have to do all of these festivals. Just pick something that feels right. I mean, when we did third grade last year, we decided to do Hanukkah and Passover. And I know it wouldn't really be considered a festival, but it was something that we were celebrating that we don't normally do. And we did it because it was based on the curriculum, and so we decided to do it. So we backed off on some of the other stuff that we would normally do. And, you know, and then we were doing that. So, or what felt right. We did the St. Lucia 2 years ago for the first time when my girls were old enough. Had we not done that before, but we didn't do it again this year. So you don't have to do them every year. Sometimes you might have, you know, favorites. Like I love the winter solstice. That's my favorite. We always do the summer solstice because there's really nothing else going on right then. And, you know, we do different things. Michaelmas we've done sometimes, and we usually do something, you know, whether it's but we don't have a big thing for Michaelmas. You know, we may just make the dragon bread. We always do the Martinmas lantern walk, and I've got a listing here. There's a festival template that talks about how to set up your festival, and then there's a listing of all the more popular Waldorf festivals and kind of a little blurb about each one that will kind of just give you a little hint. And again, you can find a lot of information online about the festivals. Once you decide you're going to do this one, you can just start researching it and looking into it. I created a festival notebook, which is just a separate little three-ring binder. And every time I, you know, decided that I wanted to, you know, okay, I'm going to do this festival, like I might print out some songs or stories or something from the internet, I just started putting them all into the notebook, you know, three-hole punching them and then sticking them in there. And then after a year or two, I had everything in there. And then it was time for me to do winter solstice. I just turned to the section on winter solstice, and I already had everything, and I would just kind of use the same story, the same songs. Everybody recognized it and liked it. I didn't have to reinvent the wheel every time. I may add a different recipe or something, but for the most part, my festival notebook is done, and then I just pull it out and go, oh, yeah, what was that cute story about the bunny that we did for the, you know, Easter or whatever? And it's all right in there, and you can just keep it in one spot so you have it, and there you go. Made it easy just to keep it all together in one spot. I try to keep everything organized so I don't have to dig through papers and all of that. So start with what, you know, festival might resonate with you. Start with something you know or are attracted to. You're really the key to the festival. So if you're all stressed out about it, that's really going to come off for the family or for whoever's coming. So try, you know, I know a lot of times you feel like you've already got other stuff going on and then you've got to have the festival on top of it. But, you know, if it's too much, then I would say just don't, you know, I'd rather have you not do it than bring a festival in a way that's really stressful. And like I said, the one thing when I started to do these festivals, I felt really strange saying these verses and telling stories and stuff, especially when there was other people around who didn't really know what I was doing. And I remember thinking, I hope my family doesn't think this is weird, but they really, you know, took to it. And now it's like if I don't do something or skip something, they are like, oh, what happened to the story about that? And, you know, it really becomes a ritual, and it becomes just now something very comfortable and easy to do. So if it does feel a little odd sometimes if you're outside and doing that, you know, in the beginning, if you've not done it before, then it don't feel bad. I felt that way. I will say I felt odd. I thought, oh my gosh, everybody just seemed to kind of go along with it. So I just kept going and, you know, didn't make a big deal about it. And again, I've got this Common Waldorf Festival Days on here where I go through starting with Michaelmas all the way around to, Midsummer Night, and I've got some pictures and things on here you can check out, as well as the simple festival template that really kind of helps you, you know, what do I actually need to do for these festivals? What do I need to do to pull off a festival? You know, what's involved kind of a thing. And like I said, it can be just from the most simple thing of just, you know, lighting a candle and saying a verse, and to, you know, food and neighbors and music and, you know, stories and, you know, like a lantern walk and that kind of thing. So, and anything in between. It can be whatever you want. I think it's just the reverence that you bring, the joy and the ritual that you bring to it and the enthusiasm. And if you're not interested in that particular festival and you don't really want to do it, then I'd say don't do it. There's no shoulds and haves here. You can choose to, do the ones you want. And maybe next year add another one if it's just too crazy or that doesn't seem like something you want to do, then you don't do it. That's the whole thing. So, feeling confident about it once you start doing a few of them, or have done it a few times, then you feel like, again, just like anything else, it seems like, oh, this isn't really that hard at all. So you can check out that, and I'll be happy to, take any questions on the festivals, and really any questions as we're kind of wrapping up. I'd love to get your feedback here on the course, on what we've talked about here, how this has affected you and your family, and any additional questions that you might have as we're sort of wrapping up. Sometimes questions will pop up from earlier lessons. Oh, I forgot to ask about this. Feel free to ask on our forum as well as on the Facebook group, because it's a lot of information here, and I don't want to try to overwhelm you too much. Just try to get the basic points so that you can kind of take that information and run with it, and then move on to the next step. So I thoroughly have enjoyed walking you through this path and through your journey, and I'm so excited and proud that you have decided to embark on this journey, and I hope that the information that is in this program is helping you or will help you to become a successful homeschooling family. And I just want to thank you again so much. All right, bye-bye.